I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me and my two friends, Travis and Michael, and we are going to speak on religion. What's up, my brothers?
Feeling good this morning.
Yes.
Living the dream.
There we go.
Hoping you know, it's mine.
Oh, boy.
It's funny.
That's Travis. Opening up a whole thing. What? Yes. So we are here today. I thank y'all for joining me to talk about The Prophet from Khalil Gibran. If y'all are new to the show, go on over to In the Cab Radio, anywhere, at In the Cab Radio. Just put it in the browser. My Facebook page will come up, the Instagram page, and hopefully the link tree. And you can learn about the show and more about Khalil Gibran and find some resources. And my last show with these two was 2 weeks ago when we were discussing on beauty. And we've talked about the poem on prayer. Travis and I talked about that. And I feel like this poem really lends back to our conversation on prayer. He really simplifies things.
Several of his poems do seem like a summary of sorts.
Well, it is funny how the whole book's leading up to, it almost seems like the titles of the chapters get heavier as it goes on. Now we have religion, the next one's on death, and then it's farewell. And I feel like in this on religion chapter, everyone's so stoked to hear El Mitra talk about what he's got to say about religion. He's like, what are you guys even talking about? Is this not the only thing I've been talking about this entire time? Have you even been listening?
Right. And it's like, but the whole, you know, for people who are new, the whole book, we started out on love. Then we go to marriage, children, giving, eating and drinking, work, joy and sorrow, houses, clothes, buying and selling, crime and punishment, laws, freedom, reason and passion, pain, self-knowledge, teaching, friendship, talking, time, good and evil, prayer, pleasure, beauty. And then he said, religion. Well, that's what we've been talking about this whole time.
It's
and they're like,
oh,
yeah, it's everything.
It's the word religion. It's like what you're doing all the time.
Yes.
You know, that's what makes you a religious type of person. But, you know, the words get changed by the agreements in the community. So now when we hear the word religion, it feels different. It looks different in our minds when we say it. We don't really see it in ourselves that it's that smile you always give. You know what I mean? It's that, you know, you're always at the door holding it open. You're right there noticing the needs around you and trying to fulfill.
Yes.
And like the poem on work, work is visible love.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and each poem connects in that same way into what you're doing all the time.
That's right. I love it. Well, and when you were talking about who, you know, living the dream, hoping it's mine. And then my reaction was based on that dot that you just connected there where we make collective agreements. And so the word religion means something different to, you know, than it did a little while ago. Like I was speaking with some people last night and, you know, they're like, I hate religion. And then I was like, let me read you this poem. I'm like, because you are religion. Because what, you know, has, I think, pervaded our society is religion with an oppressive and obsessive power-hungry lens. And I was thinking on my way over here, like, they need to get it back to basics. We need to get back to the birds and the trees and the smile.
The proof in the pudding. It's like, we were talking before I read the poem. I was talking to Michael about wonder. Like wonder is one of the signs of connectivity to the creator. To me, like I see it in my kids as a father. I've watched it slowly like fade as they grow. But that wonder is one of the key elements. Like a flower has a flower. You know, the colors and the things. It's like the fruit. The proof in the pudding is wonder. Once you start losing the wonder, what's left? You know.
Yes. Oh, that's sinking in when I think about science and how they want to, that almost resonates with how I feel about what science is trying to do. Because it's all magic, right? But when you put it in a lab and distill it, it's still a miracle. However, your cold calculation of it and wanting to dismiss the wonder of it is the part that makes it where the magic is detracted, but it's still like that chemical compound. Yeah. It's wonder that we're all here. Like all of this is happening at this time. Like there's the miracle. Put it under as many microscopes as you want, but it's still magic. But when you call it, no, it's science and it's gold and I made it and now I can replicate it and I'm God.
Right. That's confusing. Not learning with knowing. Knowing is like a terrible thing. You stop learning at that point because your brain is stopped at one calculation. That's just not how anything works.
People spend so much time and effort trying to prove that God's real, not realizing it's literally right in front of them.
Right. Everything they're doing it by the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should read that.
I was about to say, we should bring everybody in on the joke. All right, everybody. So... yada yada yada, the prophet, his name's Al Mustafa. He's getting ready to leave. He's so much closer to his departure now that we are at the end of the book. He's been in Orphalese for 12 years, and he sees his ship coming off in the distance, and everybody's like, don't leave, and he's like, I gotta go. And Almitra comes outside. They all follow him down to the water. This is the brief synopsis. Okay, I'm being quick today. And while they're waiting for his boat to dock, the people ask him to share his wisdoms with them. And mainly Almitra says, tell us about ourselves and what you've witnessed so that we may hold on to your wisdoms and pass them on to our children and them to theirs, and it'll never be forgotten. And when you go and look up the prophet, especially if you go to KhalilGibran.com, you'll find the story of there's an article that's written called The End of the Copyright Road for the Prophet. And the author is a Khalil Gibran scholar, and he talks about from the first date of publication to 2024, 100 years later, how many times the Prophet has been published, translated, and renewed. And it has been around and doing this and sold more copies than the Bible. So this is, I like to go back to Almitra's words about asking him to share so that it may never be forgotten, because it's been several generations that this book has comforted people, from military soldiers in World War II through prisoners at Guantanamo Bay here within the last 15, 20 years. So do yourself a favor, learn more about the prophet. Toward the end, an old priest says, speak to us of religion. And he said, have I spoken this day of aught else? Is not religion all deeds and all reflection, and that which is neither deed nor reflection, but a wonder and a surprise, ever springing in the soul, even while the hands hew the stone or tend the loom? Who can separate his faith from his actions, or his belief from his occupations? Who can spread his hours before him, saying, this for God and this for myself, this for my soul and this other for my body? All your hours are wings that beat through space from self to self. He who wears his morality but as his best garment were better naked. The wind and the sun will tear no holes in his skin. And he who defines his conduct by ethics imprisons his songbird in a cage. The freest song comes not through bars and wires. And he to whom worshiping is a window to open but also to shut has not yet visited the house of his soul, whose windows are from dawn to dawn. Your daily life is your temple and your religion. Whenever you enter into it, take with you your all. Take the plow and the forge and the mallet and the lute, the things you have fashioned in necessity or for delight. For in reverie, you cannot rise above your achievements nor fall lower than your failures. And take with you all men, for in adoration, you cannot fly higher than their hopes nor humble yourself lower than their despair. And if you would know God, be not therefore a solver of riddles. Rather look about you, and you shall see him playing with your children. And look into space, and you shall see him walking in the cloud, outstretching his arms in the lightning, and descending in rain. You shall see him smiling in flowers, then rising and waving his hands in trees. Khalil Gibran, the prophet, on religion. Yeah.
It's an odd thing because, like, I feel like the definition that he tries to put out there, or tries, you know, you can only try to describe some of these things, would contradict a lot of what we now refer to as religion in our minds because of the agreements or the news or the media, or, you know what I mean?
Go walk in the building on Sunday at 10 a.m. And if you don't do that, you're...
Yeah, it's like describing the undescribable. He says you can't separate religion from work and what you do and how you live. And a lot of us define ourselves by what we do. Like, even when somebody introduces me, it's as the carpenter or as the carver. Not, and when I think of it, I almost get a little bit like, I'm more than that. Like, I was your friend. I'm your brother. Like, I'm all these things. But the agreements that we've made in society form our language. And in our language is like a cage.
Yeah.
And it could mean something different to everybody. So.
Well, I think as part of a classist system is that we're defined by our career, our place in society.
Our output.
Yeah. What do you do? Well, I'm a landscaper. Therefore, you're beneath me because I'm a businessman. You work it out with your hands in the sun. And so that's where class hierarchy is based. Now, if you were a landscape architect, that's different from the guy that's moving the rocks,
more office
right?
Time.
Yeah. You know, you get a white shirt, you know. Yeah, I've been trying to learn different ways to talk to people, especially at parties and stuff, you know, like, what do you do for fun? Where's your joy? Like, I don't know, you know.
Well, I have to say it's been nice to move out here after spending like 4 years in New York, where it was like within 2 minutes of every conversation, it's like, what do you do? Because it's almost like you can tell they're saying, what am I going to get out of this relationship with you? I moved here. I knew people for 2, 3, 4 months before I finally figured out what they did. Like, no one cares. It's like, who are you is much more what people care about.
Well, I was talking to Bad DJ the other day. She said, just in passing, you know, and I'm just calling you out so many times because love you. She's like, somebody asked me the other day if I was an artist, and it brought it to me that that was the first thing that I get asked all the time. Even when I'm on my jobby job as a painter, they're like, oh, you know, are you an artist? I'm like, nah, I'm just painting houses. I almost like, I'm like, I don't make like paintings. And then one day, you know, the neighbor here and a client friend, you know, was like, you need to paint. And I'm like, I paint for work. I can't do that. But now I'm like painting with little acrylic paints and doing collage. And I'm like, oh, I guess I am an artist in that way. I mean, a writer, musician, even all of these definitions, but the thing about it is, are you an artist? And I think we all could say yes to that. The art of life, the art of loving.
Yes, and I think it goes back to that word wonder. Like, where do you find the wonder in your work? You know, you can find wonder in business. You can find wonder in landscaping. It's like looking for God in the potential of what's happening. And then once you start working, you feel the flow. It's almost the same quickening. Sort of chakra thing of accomplishment, like, your vision is manifesting because you have to see something before you do it in those trades, painting or whatever it is. You have to kind of visualize it and make it happen. And that goes back to like living the dream. You know, manifestation is a big topic in the world of spirituality these days, like The Secret, all of those different things, manifesting. But then the flip side of that, there's always a paradox.
Wanting.
Are you living in someone else's dream?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Have you got sucked into that energy? And I mean, I've asked myself that my whole life and then just recently been like, what does it matter what you do as long as you don't lose the wonder in what you're doing? Where's the wonder in your music? And you're like, how do you find it? Like when I'm cutting wood into a fresh tree and I'm just discovering the ring patterns, the knots, the things, the feeling is really kind of exciting. It's like I'm digging for gold in some kind of way. But just like gold, the worst thing about gold digging is finding it.
It's over now.
But then you look for the next nugget and the next nugget.
With that wonder, even, like we were talking before, like what word really describes the wonder that you feel when you read a book like The Prophet? You know, and I could only come up with the word addiction because it satisfies that feeling where almost the chakra starts vibrating first, and then you find yourself doing something completely productive, having like really clear thoughts for a while.
Some people would say that's our natural state, that we're meant to feel in connection with the world around us. The vibration could be higher, but based on the capitalist beat down, like, because the why I don't find joy in everything that I do in every moment is because I don't feel like I have choice. And when I wanted to ask, bring it back to beauty, when we were saying beauty isn't a thing outside of yourself or the observation of it, it is the experience of it. So you used those same words 2 weeks ago about the vibration of the heart chakra and, you know, that feeling of connectedness when we discussed experiencing beauty.
But just like the paradox and joy and sorrow, when somebody is downloading to me that they're feeling really low, like they're seeing themselves as, you know, ugly or not productive, and you can just feel it emanating off of them, I can automatically mimic that. I can feel what they're feeling. But then at the same time, there's something in me that's like, no, they're not going to win. I'm going to throw up the mirror and they're going to see what I see them as, because everyone I'm around out here is absolutely beautiful in their own ways. Some of them might be like button pushers or whatever, but, you know, they don't see that their smile is lighting me up and I'm showing that back to them. And that's the them that they want to see, that they're looking for. So, you know, big smiles to everybody out there.
In radio land, you're listening to In the Cab with Dream Queen, and I'm here with Travis and Michael, and we're discussing Khalil Gibran's The Prophet on Religion here in the book club, in case you're just joining. You want to join in, Michael?
Yeah, I'm just listening. No, I was just thinking back a little bit to when we were talking about artistry there for a second, and I feel like whenever I'm like doubting my artistry the most is when I'm looking at it through the veil of like trying to put pen on paper or something. And whenever I'm feeling the most connected to my artistry, it's when I strip away all expectations of what it has to look like. And I'm just like dealing with people. Like that feels like that's the craft that I get the most joy out of, because it's constantly all around you. And like, people don't even realize that 100 times a day someone walks in front of them that they have the opportunity to wash their feet, and they just like throw their blinders up and they're focused on a certain mission, when like you're able to serve God in every single moment. You don't have to do it in the ways that you think you have to, I guess.
I've watched you pull this magic before. I've seen people go into your shop, you'll have a short conversation, then suddenly clothing starts entering your mind and you take them to the exact spot in the rack. You're literally like dressing them. They're leaving with a handful of books, maybe spent like half the money they earned in the week, and they're happy as can be telling all their friends to come back to your place. It's like some kind of ninja Jedi move. I can't even describe it. Everyone around there has seen it happen, and that's art. It's the...
Well, all I'm doing is exactly what you said, which is showing them how I see them, yes. Letting them see that. I don't even need mirrors in the shop for that to happen. Yeah.
Yes, also mirroring can have its other side.
Oh, totally.
As we've discussed many times.
Yeah.
Yes, it's an alchemy, a way of being. And it's not lost on me, sitting here and talking about this material and sharing it with other people, giving folks different ways to think about things. We are alchemists. And you can take that image that someone is projecting at you and reshape it, you know, through your own energy force and give it back to them.
As gold.
It's a very beautiful thing. Yeah. Yes, led into gold is really, that's really the meaning of it. You know, to take something that is seen as worthless or undesirable and take those same properties and present them as ultimate value.
I don't want anyone to ever feel like they don't have permission to get better or experience joy too. No matter what you've done in your life, you need to get yourself to a point where you can give yourself the opportunity to have a clean slate and make amends when you have to. But I feel like a lot of people stay in their loop because they feel anchored to who they are. Like, full permission to all of you to get better at any moment.
And pivot at any moment.
Ooh, the pivot.
The pivot.
Those listening here in New Mexico, I was thinking about Roadrunner Medicine. And I was speaking with a friend of mine about the pivot in a book that I have that breaks down some animal totems and animal medicine. The Roadrunner's tail acts as a rudder so that it can just make quick, sharp turns. And that can be something that someone who witnesses a Roadrunner could take into account, that something is coming your way that you might have to shift really quickly. And the crown on the Roadrunner's head representing mental faculties, how we are alchemists through our perception. It's not like going back to the lab at home and lighting 1,000 candles and, you know, getting the right herbs always. I mean, there things have different energies, but it's really up in your brain, you know?
Yes, and how we see it, like, it seems like Roadrunners are crazy because they will play with the most dangerous animal around.
Oh, that's dinner. Yeah, they eat those.
Well, I'm talking about cats.
Oh, I thought you were talking about rattlesnakes.
No. Cats are like one of the most vicious animals on the planet. They like literally in the United States reduce the bird population by a ridiculous amount. But, you know, they're natural born killers, these cats. And I've lived in places where just having a cat brought Roadrunners to the yard because one of their favorite games is to play with the cat. The cat has no chance of catching that thing. Yet, it just runs around them and causes them to think that they're going to catch it. And it's just like the cartoon. It's like always just right there, but not even close.
Well, it's interesting because it's another part of the Roadrunner medicine. It evolved into a mostly flightless bird. You know, and so that agility to adapt, they call it a ground-dwelling cuckoo. So, yeah, that thing is cuckoo, and it's going here and there, and it's like, you think, wow, you can't fly, you can't get away, that must make you super vulnerable, and it's like, nah, look what I can do, zigzag, zigzag, stick a move.
Where I grew up in Carlsbad, you used to, like, put your new pads in your air conditioner, and the next day, the Roadrunners would be at that thing pulling it out from the nest.
Let's see. So let's go into a couple of things in this poem. Well, actually, I want to talk about the collective vision a little bit. You know, when we realize that not just the three of us in this room are alchemists, but every single one of us are manifestors, and what we take in our culture and how we express our God energy. I just want to really keep that central to the conversation. You know, the media and all of this stuff, it can be really dangerous. So the God that we each serve is inside of us and our perception of things, right? Of our perception of the world outside of us. And so it is really important to keep our minds on certain, I don't know. I don't want to just say positivity, but, you know, how these times are hard, though.
No, it's true, though, Jada, because I mean, he mentions it in the book too, but you can't just call on God asking for stuff when you're feeling all down and out.
That was in prayer.
Like, pull me out of it. Yeah, also in prayer.
Yeah.
Like, I actually feel the most connected to God when I think about him, her, it in my most joyful periods. Like, that's where my proof is. Like, in the low periods, too. Well, I think me and Travis were just talking about, like, when you feel a little too full, it's kind of hard to, like, witness God in everyday things. Like, there's no more room to, like, grow. But when you empty yourself out a little bit or talk to someone that's feeling pretty empty, well, that's kind of counterintuitive to what I just said. Yeah.
Well, it's the paradox as well.
Yeah,
everything
always,
is counterintuitive to what we say. Language is a mess. But that emptying of the barrel is just like, it ain't going to rain until you empty your reservoirs kind of thing, you know? And to allow yourself to do that, but not connect to somebody in a tone-deaf way. Like, you can be vibrating high, someone else is vibrating low, and your next thing that comes out of your mouth could be completely tone-deaf to what they're feeling. It's like surfing. Alchemy, surfing. I mean, you're hit with these waves, and you need to meet somebody halfway. And like he was saying, turning it on and off, like the window that's open and then closed in the poem that we just read, to be able to see it in that lowness, when you feel heartbroken, when you need to cry, when you feel the emotions in your, volcano that's in your head, just can't handle another moment. That's really powerful. That's where a lot of the most amazing art has come from, was the low moments of people's lives. I was just talking to him about a show when I was a kid called Thornbirds, which was about, Japan. It's a Japanese poem about the thornbird. Can't sing its song without putting a thorn in its heart in order to make the sound. And when I heard that, I think about Jimi Hendrix and certain characters that they definitely went to the dark side to make that sound, like, and probably knowing where it was going to end.
I mean, do they go there on purpose, though? I mean, is this part of the human condition? I mean, I can...
Like the writer alcohol syndrome?
Kind right. Of, I mean, you're feeling, and then things are hard and they're terrible, and then you do the alchemy. However, it's not I guess we each make our choices, but despair is I don't know. I feel like I don't want to get too spiritually bypassy and say that we could choose to suffer. But it happens. And what we do with that, because he died, the 27 Club is really not, anything to take lightly. And I don't know that the spiral of alcohol and drugs makes making better art. It happens, but it's a condition of the pain, of the empathy of, some people can take the same pain.
Well, it's just screaming like the On Love chapter. Like, it's like denumbing yourself to a point where you can laugh all of your laughter and cry all of your tears. I was just talking to someone in my life last night. We were just reading random chapters from this and read through Love. And I was like, the corny way of saying it, the lame way of saying it is like, I don't know, like you go through heartbreak or something and someone gives you advice like, oh, but aren't you so grateful to be able to
feel better
to
have loved to it and have lost it and loved it all.
And then the cool way is like, and if you're only, it's something like if you're only after love for the up parts, for the beauty and the joy, then you might as well step fully out, because then you're never going to laugh all your laughter or cry all of your tears.
And crying all your tears is terrible. I don't want to cry all my tears.
But if you didn't, you couldn't laugh all your laughter.
It makes me
want
to drink, okay? Yeah. And that's like a whole battle.
But I'll have like these conversations with people in their low moments where they're just like really feeling it. And, like they say, like, do your dark work, deal with your shadows, like all of that kind of thing. When I see somebody processing in front of me, it's like I see the next thing coming already. And it kind of gets me excited. Like, as I hear the processing, someone will say, I've got myself in all this trouble. I keep making these mistakes. I keep looping around to all this stuff. And I'm sitting there thinking, you're discovering yourself right now and you're figuring it out. And this is how you get to that next thing. And because I see how low you are, it tells me how high you've been. Like, that's why you're there. You didn't know that you chose this. But you like to experience life on the extremes. Really high comes with really low. And although I feel your pain in the moment, I know how high you want to vibrate. And you're going to be there too.
Witnessing someone that's visibly at their low is proof that they've been high, because otherwise yes. It would be their baseline and they wouldn't be witnessing that they're in right. A low point.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. I was telling Travis, I do feel severely underqualified to be speaking on religion with you.
Why? I mean, you're doing great. I wouldn't have invited you.
Yeah. No, I think it's because it's like it's literally like the foremost point like in my life. So I feel like the most impacted by it. So then it like feels like a heavier weight to talk about, because I'm like employing it in my everyday life. So I just like, I know how powerful it is and how there's always like room to grow. And I don't know. Is the second you think you're qualified to talk on this too, you shouldn't be talking about it, I guess.
No, yeah, that's the whole thing. Like it needs to be, but
we should all be humble, but we should all be in our full power.
Yeah.
Nobody, I mean, I think about that all the time. Sorry to cut you off, but it's a journey for me. I get up every day. I'm like, what am I qualified to come here and talk to these people about this? I've lost my mind this week. Anybody could go on the internet right now and be like, Jada act like, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm sitting here on the radio. But that's the whole part of what we're saying, is the bravery to be vulnerable and to be imperfect.
Take the ego out of
it.
Is
the perfection.
Yeah.
And at least we're sitting here, even if it's for a few minutes a week, to let ourselves mull these things over and grow and just bring it into the vibration, into the room. You know, we can't, you know, ever stop
reaching. No, I think children are more qualified to speak on religion because they're closer to source. Their wonder is high level.
It's pure.
Like I can't describe the vibrations that come from a child when they are looking in your eyes with complete and total love and just wonder, and it's just shining out like you just had a flashlight in your face. And, you know, the things, you know, like I said, the things that we do, our work, you know, whether you're a parent, all of those things kind of define who you are in a way. And so I see a lot of my connection to God through carpentry and through children. You know, I see it all the time. Like you say, when you're in it all the time, it's hard to even acknowledge what it is you're seeing, because you're not analyzing it anymore. It's like, don't be a solver of riddles.
Yeah, exactly. That part. Don't ask why is another DJ, bad DJ ism. And I'm like, I'm always going to ask why is just part of me. But I get the point. I get that just being the thing is all you have to do.
And the humbling situation, like that's almost the connection. It's why would I not take credit for every carving I carve? Because in my mind, I'm making sawdust and, you know, Ja is in the same project with me at all times.
You're just feeling like the vessel.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're working together. That way my ego can't take all the credit for anything. I mean, that's just not how life works. And I love that feeling, that checkpoint. Just like, you know, I can make an amazing carving and my next one could be terrible. But that first amazing carving, just like finding gold, will send me on a path with my ego thinking that this is just how it always is, because this is me. I'm doing this. This is really exciting. And that's right when it goes bad. And I get the check, just so, oh no, this log is going to have a rotten spot in the middle of it. You just got tricked into going in a direction. You went so far, now you can't stop, and it's firewood.
Wow, you know, and it's very interesting to take responsibility for our creations. You know, there is a certain aspect of, as we each are God, where the intention is. And I'm thinking about the folks who are in the darkness that find it hard to bring light to others. And, you know, what kind of energy they serve. Is it an ego energy? Is it the antichrist? Is it, you know, and when I say Christ consciousness, is there a servant to always balance the light, the good, the destruction of humanity?
Well, everything's in all of us. And when you were talking about when you said addiction, the feeling you get when you like read this and that feel like, I was going to use the word connectedness, which you mm-hmm. then ended up using. And I think like what I said earlier about giving people permission to feel better, like the people that are pretty low and have a hard time raising the vibration, all they're doing is seeking connectedness through what's right in their face, which is their low point. But if you offer them, you do have to meet them halfway, but if you offer them a sliver of getting a different opportunity to feel that connectedness, then they're able to latch on that in a way, and it can start to grow. Because it's in everyone. You just have to be able to mirror them to a certain point to understand where they're at.
Where's Trump's good spot, you guys?
Dude, can you imagine, I don't know, he got gifted all that money from his daddy and stuff, but, like, if he's this fucked up of a human,
Okay, I gotta write that down.
Yes, I'm sorry. We were talking about Trump. It came out. I won't bring that up no more. That was the first one. All
right.
But if he's that messed up, I can't imagine like the things he went through as a kid, something like that.
Well, I mean, yes, it was, but there's a whole. And I did the wrong thing. I brought it down to one individual. They have a legion that's based on a religious philosophy that I think is around manifest destiny. And so what I mean is, what I was trying to point to is that cult of, I want to call it a cult of evil lizards from outer space. I mean,
reptile people.
Right? I mean,
but the amount of abuse that has gone into creating that character is like what I was talking about with the dark work, the shadow work that you do inside of you. You know, people have been abused, and it's a pattern with that group, with that cult in specific, and they're so invested in it that they just have to stick with it. If they were to show empathy and compassion, then it would blow their cover.
They'd have to start over.
So what do we do? How do we, like, do y'all think there's hope for humanity? I've been struggling with this.
Think about it. I feel like, you know, characters like Elon and Trump, they want nothing more than genuine connection.
Connectedness.
But they can't seem to get it. They come off as awkward to most people in public because they've never experienced relaxing enough to receive real love, or, you know, to walk in a room and everyone's just genuinely happy to see them, not because you paid for the event, you know, or whatever, but because everyone just loves your energy. And when you don't have that naturally, and everything has to be paid for with money, you're giving yourself false, affirmations. You know what I mean? All the time, you're paying for people to smile at you, to do all this. And in some ways, people are seeing that as a strength. He gets it no matter what. He can do no wrong. You know what I mean? And it's really awkward because it just mirrors the bully vibe of little kids. You know what I mean? You see all of the things in adulthood play out on the playground.
Yep. The bullied becomes the bully. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, how can someone reach out a lifeline to, like, the Trump or the Elon, like you're talking about, and be like, hey, man, like, I know you're feeling cornered, but there's a way out.
And those folks show me my own dark side. And I know that violence, the end of that extreme, no matter how you break it down, is cruelty. You know, yet sometimes they'll pull it out in me where all of a sudden they're starting to get a little violent with the words.
I just dropped the F-bomb because of it.
And I get really, like, you know, like, I want to go there. And that's me introducing myself to my own dark side, which I don't approve of once I analyze it. But it can take over in a moment, and suddenly you're where they are, wanting a civil war.
What you just said, I want to touch on real quick, because it brought me back to, like, how do we respond in the moments? And where is it? I'm looking for the line right now. He who defines his conduct by ethics imprisons his songbird in a cage. Now, that got me kind of questioning the nonviolence and the which part of ourselves do we let show. Like, is me trying to be on a certain level all the time, like, imprisoning my songbird to be able to drop the F-bomb right in somebody's face when they're being way out of pocket and they have, like, where in their dream can I become their nightmare? Like, and that's the whole other Dream Queen Kali vibe, though. It's like there's The gods have so many faces because they're so necessary. We have to be ready to pivot. And I'm just bringing it right back to that. Or else, you know, it's just that had me questioning some things, you know. And then when you brought it up, like, yes, I know, like, doing the shadow work doesn't, it means to acknowledge it and also find where my shadow is, has their role in my active life. She doesn't just live in a box inside of me. That's Xena, and we're trying to decide when we need the sword, when we need the peaceful dialogue.
Well, it feels like,
yeah, like a minute.
A cage made of grass sticks once I analyze it, because I can feel like, because I've been successfully nonviolent for periods of my life, that's part of my thing. But most people can look in my face and realize it's probably not the thing. Mm-hmm. And when I do my shadow work, I realize that when emotions come up and things happen, I'm not who I think I am anymore. And I can be as cruel as anybody.
Or you're fully who you think you are, because it's your impulse to warn people not to mess around over in a boundary. The Venus-Mars conjunction I talk about a lot, of fight, how we fight for what we love, you know. How our energy is put forward through love. And sometimes it can be, and if God in the Bible is the God inside us, sometimes vengeance is mine. I don't, but for real.
There's a Ram Dass disciple that talks about sometimes the most loving thing you can do is fight back if it's for the right reasons. Maybe we could think about that and what we're fighting against right now at a macro scale.
Because it makes me really sad to feel like I'm just going to lay down and let them extinguish the population by just peacing and loving. I mean, yes, I want to do that. That's the first thing. But then the next thing is then they really, you know, are grinning.
If that was the right thing, we'd all go sit on a mountain and just meditate our lives away. But there's work to be done.
And there's people that are doing that I think everybody's got a role. Yeah. Like those monks up there, and even the times that we each have spent. And I know that those reflective moments when I'm not, people are like, I didn't know you still lived here. I'll never see you. I mean, I was reading and meditating and reading Martin Luther King, so I don't say I smack people, but I do go outside. I give my best. So we need those moments, you know. Sometimes that work is that inner work. I mean, it is that inner work. Not sometimes, just all the time.
Everything is everything.
Everything is everything. Love you. In the Cab Radio is produced by Jada White, aka Dream Queen. Original theme music produced by Baby Weekend Boys and Icky Mac the Beat Jugular. Learn more at In the Cab Radio at Linktree. Thank you so much for tuning in.